Welcome, everyone, to Miracle Business Breakthrough. This is your host, Amy Yamada, and I'm so excited to have you joining us today for our speaker series. And I am very, very excited to introduce today's featured speaker, Greg Hickman. And Greg is a mobile marketing consultant. He's a blogger, podcaster, speaker, coach, advisor. He's also a friend, a son, a brother, and a husband. So the reason I'm introducing Greg to all of you is that he knows firsthand what it was like to go from working a corporate job to launching his own successful business. And as the owner of MobileMix.com, he's a true expert when it comes to proven mobile strategies to launch and grow your business. So welcome, Greg Hickman. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Amy. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So I just want to jump right in. I've really enjoyed our conversations leading up to your interview today, as well as checking out your websites and your background, and you just come across so authentic, like someone that we could all just hang out with and hear your stories. And I just want you to take us on a little journey and take us back in time to share some of your own breakthrough moments to get to where you are today. So can you share with us what that looked like?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, kind of, I don't want to have like a super long novel, but, you know, I started off in advertising agencies since I graduated college, but you know, as I went along that journey, you know, I started off at a very large company. We represented brands like Pepsi. So, you know, you can imagine how big the company was, you know, 200 people in an agency. And, you know, I learned a lot, realized that I definitely loved the marketing side of things, but I needed a smaller company. And I left and worked for a company after that, which was 7 people. And that's kind of what brought me into the mobile world, which I quickly fell in love with. And also realized that I wanted to be at a small company. And then I got the opportunity from there to work at a startup company, which a friend of a friend was creating. And, you know, at that time I was kind of in the know about entrepreneurship, but I didn't really get it. And I didn't have an idea of my own. So I thought, you know, I love the small atmosphere of a company, 7 people, but the company had been around for 7 years. So it wasn't really a startup at all. And I dove into this new endeavor with a friend, and I just loved the atmosphere of being in that startup world. And I felt like an entrepreneur because I was very much, you know, early on, I was the third employee. And that's when I started diving into, you know, more entrepreneurship, started reading the books and all that stuff. And, you know, what could I start on my own, trying to get my own ideas. And, you know, I always knew I was passionate about mobile, and that led me to a couple different kind of gigs between, you know, that job with my friend and kind of where I'm at now. But I would say the key thing is, you know, I had the chance to work with some big brands doing mobile marketing, and I got to the point where I felt like I needed a mentor, and I didn't really know where to go, and there weren't a lot of people doing mobile. So I started my blog and my podcast primarily for selfish reasons to start interviewing people that I thought were doing really, really cool and innovative things in the mobile world. And, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't really know what that would lead to. So I started interviewing these people, and, you know, I just knew that some way, shape, or form, by me creating these relationships, some doors would open. And, you know, lo and behold, I started building an audience on that podcast and the blog. And this was all, you know, after my 9-to-5 jobs at the time. You know, I'm doing this late at night, you know, staying up late, working hard on it, interviewing guests, early morning hours, you know, editing it when I'm not at work. So it was very much tiring, but
mm-hmm.
I knew that talking to these people would lead to something. And as I just kept kind of reading up on how other people were building their businesses, then I would come up with an idea. And, you know, after having all these conversations, I realized that I could start training people, and I started offering online trainings around my expertise, which was mobile, and that's kind of taken me to where I'm at now, where I have my own mobile marketing agency. We have clients, which are retail companies. So it really would have never happened if I didn't start interviewing these other experts, I feel like. Mm-hmm. You know, it just, without even having a goal, I started, and, you know, the next step just kept leading me to the next step, and then I ended mm-hmm. up here.
That is so, what an exciting journey. It's funny to think about, you know, sometimes when we go back in time, you can really connect the dots back can't you, to those ad agency days. And I think that we talked a little bit about this in our previous conversation, since I also worked in the corporate world and the advertising world, but in on the media side of things. And there's something to be said about learning from those experiences and bringing what you loved about them into, you know, the next chapter and then the next chapter to where you are today. So, yeah, it's fascinating. But what I wanted to have you expand on a little bit is, so when you went from going from the ad agencies to smaller company and then startup and on your own, at what point did you feel comfortable, if there was even a point you actually felt comfortable or ready to take that leap of faith? Because I know that you and I have probably both met entrepreneurs who they're working at a job or they're kind of doing a little bit of both, you know, where they're, you know, doing their day job and starting to think about their business or maybe even launch their business on the side, but they really haven't taken that full leap. So at what point did you feel like, okay, I'm really ready to go off my own and I feel like I can still pay the bills, you know, while I'm still growing? Was there a moment that you can describe for us for that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely thought that I was ready probably before I was actually ready. You know, I thought I could do it. And, you know, until there kind of a handful of things happened that, or I knew needed to happen for me to feel like super comfortable. And, what those were one, I needed to give myself like a deadline. I needed to say, okay, Greg, by this time frame, no matter what happens, you're going to give it a shot. If that means, you know, quote unquote, taking the leap, that's what that means. Mm-hmm. But, you know, after kind of talking to a lot of successful entrepreneurs, like, I realized that the whole leap as a word is like we kind of like hype up the word leap. Most people don't leap. You know, the people that like make the transition, they build some sort of bridge. And that's what I realized. So I needed to figure out what my bridge was going to be. And the criteria that kind of made up my bridge were this deadline. One, that the side business was generating at least 60% of what my current paycheck was at that time. And I was making low six figures, so I knew that I could survive off 60% of that. And the other one was that I was out of debt. I had about 20 or 25K in credit card debt. So I said to myself, if I could have no debt, my business is making enough money, and I can do both of these before the deadline, then I have absolutely zero reasons to not do this. Mm-hmm. So I got the business making enough money. I was well early. You know, I had probably like another 6 months before that deadline was coming, but I still had the debt, and I didn't really have a way to get out of the debt until I realized that I could sell my house, which I owned a townhome at the time that I had invested in about maybe three or so years earlier. And I sold my townhome. It was a good time in the market. And I was able to take the profits from the townhome and pay off my debt, and still have some kind of in my back pocket, you know, for a rainy day if things didn't go well. And I paid off the debt. And then that was like probably November of 2013. And my deadline was May of 2014. So I sat there and I was like, okay, well, I have enough money coming in from the side business. I have no debt. I have probably at least 8 to 12 months of runway of money in savings to invest in myself if I needed it, which I didn't need because the business was making money. Why haven't I left yet? And basically the next day I went into my full-time job and I gave them my notice. And it ended up being a month long kind of exit. I really liked the people that I was working with, and my boss asked me to kind of give them a month. So I gave them a month and basically went to the end of the year, and, you know, started 2014 fresh working for myself. So I had a lot of those things in place, and, you know, I kind of had like a year and 4 months of kind of planning to get there. So it wasn't just like, I'm out. You know, I'm leaving this job. You know, I had a lot of things in place that I knew would make the transition easy. Because to be honest, I was scared of like how I was going to be able to pay bills, and I knew that fear wasn't going to go away unless I had my debt paid off and, you know, some of these other things in place. So that's what I focused on for a handful of months.
Wow. No, I'm loving this story. And you know what, you know, when I'm thinking about our listeners who are tuning in today and hearing what you're talking about, if they're in this boat right now, is that you had a plan, you know, you had a really good plan about, okay, here's the deadline and here's the bridge that I'm creating with the criteria of, you know, releasing the debt, you know, paying off the debt and then making 60% of what you're making at your corporate job. And, you know, it's funny. I wish we'd had this conversation years ago because I went through the same thing, but I didn't have as strategic of a plan, if you will. But I did do some of the things were similar because I was really thinking about launching my own business, and I did work with a business coach to help me kind of release the limiting beliefs and the fear of, you know, going off on my own. And she did say, you know, you've got to give yourself a date, you know, you got to put a deadline on it. So it's funny that you talk about that. And for me, I just did, for me to bridge the gap instead of just quitting and starting or taking a leap, I guess in a sense, I also created a bridge where I asked the publisher of the company. So I went from working in radio to working for a local lifestyle publication magazine. Mm-hmm. And I asked if I could go from working full time to working on contracts, which would really give me a lot more freedom. I already had a lot of freedom in my job, but this would make me feel like, okay, I didn't have to just wait until the evenings or weekends to work on my stuff. So anyway, long story short, when I finally did move on even from the contract, I wasn't making 60% in my business of what I had been making, but I knew that I was really committed to moving on, and I also did the whole end of year, beginning of year, fresh start thing. So there's a lot of common ground here, except you had a better plan than me.
What's really interesting is, you know, when I left, my whole business has been focused on mobile, but when I left, I got so inspired by the fact that, like, I didn't feel like anybody, you know, there's tons of podcasts out there, you know, and, you know, talking about entrepreneurship and all this stuff, but I didn't think or feel the ones that I was listening to, anyone was covering the how did you actually leave? Like, what did that look like?
Right.
And so I had actually started a podcast called Leaving Corporate. It no longer exists, unfortunately, but there were about 50 episodes. And what I learned in those 50 episodes is that very rarely it's the leap. And I go back to that kind of the statement of the bridge. And I kind of found that people did a lot of people did what you did. And, you know, it's people shouldn't be afraid to ask for things like that. Like, hey, would it be possible for me to transition to a contract instead of employee? Hey, would it be possible for me to maybe work from home 2 days a week? Hey, would it be possible to, you know, work part-time?
Right.
All of these things, and sometimes you even combine them all together, and you slowly make your transition out. And that's what I found is, like, everyone that I interviewed for those 50 episodes, they either had two consulting clients that maybe signed, like, a 12-year contract or 12-month contract.
Uh-huh.
12 year, that would have been awesome.
Twelve month
contract. So, like, they knew that they were going to have money coming in for the next, you know, 24 or 12 months. I can't even think. 12 months. And then they asked for the part-time. Then they asked to work from home. And it was like all these slow little things. Or they had a bunch of money in savings and they just said, hey, you know what? This savings is going to be my investment in myself. And, you know, I think, like, maybe two people out of the 50, like, tapped into their 401k and, you know, almost had nothing left. And, yes, those stories are amazing, but I think that's the story that kind of always shines as, like, oh, my God, this guy had, like, $1 in his checking account and he turned it into a million. But, like, that's the story that pops out because it's so fascinating. But that doesn't mean it's not possible by doing all of these little steps over the course of, you know, 1 or 2 years. Which actually puts you in a better position because at the end of the day, like, I knew that if I had to go back to my full-time employer, I didn't leave on bad terms. I gave them a month. Like, my boss knew before I even gave my month. Like, she knew it was happening. So, like, I could have gone back, you know. So if things didn't go well in the first, like, 3 to 6 months and I really wanted to find a job, like, I didn't burn that bridge, you know.
Right.
And I think that's really important. And for me, that made me feel like – I don't have that much to be afraid of because I could always fall back on this thing.
Exactly. And I think that word fear that comes up for a lot of people is so it's so interesting, right? We focus on the fear of what will happen if this or that, the other, right? And so it's so amazing that we're talking about this because it really takes me back to that time.
Yeah.
I will admit that I was really fearful. Like, okay, what will happen if I go in with my proposal? Because I really thought it through and I presented it as a proposal to this, you know, the business owner. I thought, okay, if this is,
yeah.
I'm really thinking this through. But what if he says, you know, Amy, you're either in 100% or you're not, and we love you, but, you know, if you're really kind of focusing on something else, then we're going to have to go our separate ways. That was
right.
a possibility. But what was helpful for me was to have my mentor, my business coach, walk me through the fear. And she said, and maybe you've heard this before, she said, Amy, what does fear stand for? I'm like, you're going to tell me, apparently. She said, it stands for false evidence. Appearing real, false evidence appearing real. Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah. It's exciting. I was pretty excited. I had to write it down. Right. False evidence appearing real. And she said, we don't know what the outcome is going to be. There's no evidence that it's going to happen. So it's appearing real, and you're having actual feelings and emotions and all these things around it, and yet it's not serving any purpose. So let's go through an exercise. And she said, okay. What is the worst case scenario if that were to happen? So for those of you who are listening and hearing some of these ideas might be thinking, oh, well, sure, you can talk about it now because you're on the other side of it, but what if it goes down this other path, you know, and I lose my job, I lose everything? It's just good to go down that path of, okay, what would the worst case scenario look like? And she took me down that path. She said, what would happen if he said you're either in or you're out, so you're out? I'd say, okay, well, it would definitely put a fire under me to get things going in my business sooner than later, you know, to a certain level. She goes, okay, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
And what if that didn't work, right? Okay, well, I mean, we took it down to a path where I lost my house and I'm on the street, you know. She goes, what if you lost your house? What would happen? And I said, well, you know, I'd probably stay with my brother, you know. And it never ended in death. Like, it never ended in being harmed or in death. It always ended up with still having shelter, still having clothing, still having food. And then after this whole series of questions, she said, okay, now knowing what that entire path looks like, knowing yourself, do you think it would get to that point? Do you really believe that? And I said, absolutely not. She goes, okay, so what would be the worst case scenario from this path for you? And it really was backed up to pretty much the beginning. I really believed in what I was doing, and I thought, worst case scenario, I will work as hard as the next person to really get things up and running, and I will find a way to make it work. So anyway, I wasn't even planning to go down this whole road, but I know that there's a reason why we're talking about this. And hopefully some of you who are listening right now are thinking, gosh, what would be the worst case scenario? And gosh, you know, from what Greg is talking about, maybe I can come up with a plan that says, okay, by this date, I am doing this. And even with me, where I didn't have as great of a plan as Greg did, I did know when my deadline was. And as I got closer to it, you better bet that I was working really hard on my own business to make sure that once that date came, that I was moving on to going from full-time to contract and then eventually going from contract to totally on my own, I made sure that I had enough of recurring, you know, income coming in from my clients and everything like that. So there is a way.
You know, I want to add to that. I want to add to that because like the fear, so much of this is mindset. And, you know, a lot of, like, in the beginning, like, I felt guilty. You know, I was like, oh, my God, like, I built the team that I'm working with. Like, some of these people took the job because they wanted to work with me. Like, I'm such a bad person, like, that, like, I'm going to be leaving these people. And
yes,
my business coach at the time was like, Greg, like, you have to understand that, you know, you don't feel guilty because, like, you have to get to the point where – you're not quitting. You're not letting them go. You're choosing to move on because you no longer need that. Like,
right.
You no longer need that salary-based position because what you've created is enough to, you know, to have you live a life that you want to live and you know, and then some. And, you know, a lot of it was me just, like, I didn't want to do it because, like, I felt bad and, you know, that would tarnish my reputation because I quit. Like, what about the dream that I had or, like, the thing that I wanted to do, you know, like, that's my choice. Like, I put myself in a position where I no longer needed that company as an employer, and it was not, like, a bad thing. It's just that's where I ended up. And, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, if you're listening and you're kind of in this situation, don't put yourself in a position where, like, you say to yourself that, oh my God, if I quit my job and I start my own thing and it doesn't work, I'm never going to be able to get a job again. Like, it's like we're tarnished mm-hmm. goods or something. Like, just because you quit a full-time job and maybe your entrepreneurial thing didn't work out, which I bet right. you it will anyway, like,
right.
you'll be able to find something else, right? Like, it's right. not like you're no longer of interest to any employer in the world because you quit your last job to try to build your own business. Like, I just think that we kind of, like, think that we're no longer employable. When
right.
push comes to shove, you'll get a job.
It's so true. It's so true. And that whole feeling of guilt can be very real. And, again, I feel like we've yeah. gone on such similar paths because I really was pretty attached, you know, because I also went from working from a large corporation to a smaller company. I helped them grow as a brand and as a business and even their revenue with clients and everything. And they really became my extended family, you know, and I felt like I knew them really well, and I felt like they really cared. We cared about each other as individuals, not just as another number. As sometimes with bigger companies, you can feel like I'm replaceable. I'm just another number. It's just about the bottom line. And sometimes you might even have gone through something where they were really supportive of you throughout that time. You know, we all have life that happens, and part of it for me was that, you know, when for those of you who know some of my story on a personal note, you know, I lost my mom about 4 years ago, and I was working for that company during that time, and they were so amazing. They were like a true family. They were there for mm-hmm. me. They're just like, let us know what we can do. Take whatever time you need. We'll take care. Don't even think about work. I mean, anything and everything that a family member should do during a difficult time, they were doing. And I had no idea that on kind of a subconscious level, if you will, I was staying attached to them in that way
mm-hmm.
well beyond all of that. And so it kept me there longer. And it wasn't until someone that is a dear friend that I feel like was, you know, a relative in past life. And she said, Amy, what's really holding you there? Because you've brought this up several times, you know, she really just, we had that heart to heart moment, right? One of those life-changing miracle business breakthrough moments. And she said, what's really holding you there? Because I really think that you know that you're going to be successful in your business. She goes, you believe that, right? And I said, well, of course, sure, of course I will be, you know. And she said, so mm-hmm. what is it? Do you feel like you're betraying them? And anyway, when it came down to it, I realized that on a deeper level, I was connecting my staying there even with the memory of my mother, you know. And I ended up just bawling my eyes out, and I thought, well, I didn't realize I was making that connection. And it was such a sense of relief. So for those of you who are listening, sometimes there is something on a deeper level that is keeping you there, whether you feel guilty because you helped build it up or you really feel connected to them as people. You're not letting them down. You're not betraying anybody. If anything, if they're really good people, they will be so excited to help you and support you and your dream, right? And
yeah.
and it'll be bittersweet for them for you to move on. So anyway.
Now, I do have something to yeah. add to that.
Sure.
That could be part of this transition because, you know, the something that's important here, I think, is like, and I've coached people before where, you know, they start slacking at their full-time job because they, like, you know, they have this side thing or they don't want to be employed by a full, like, by somebody else. They want their own business. They don't know what it is. So they start mm-hmm. slacking. And,
right.
you know, that does a couple things. One, the effort you put in for your full-time job most likely is going to be very similar to the effort you put in when you work for yourself. And
right.
I know people will disagree with me, but, like, if you start slacking off for somebody else just because you want to work for yourself, like, and then you leave and you quit, like, I guarantee you're not going to move into working for yourself with any sort of momentum because you've just been slacking the last mm-hmm. X amount of months, right? So, like,
right.
hey, don't do that because it will impact the growth and the transition of your own business. And two, mm-hmm. the relationship you have with your employer, if you are busting your butt and delivering, like, A-plus work, they're not going to want you to leave ever. So when you ask for that part-time, when you ask for work from home, you'll have way more leverage than you would have if you were just slacking off. Like, if you're doing nothing and they saw
right.
no value and you're like, hey, like, I want to leave. They're like, no, actually, we were going to fire you, you know, and
right.
then you don't have this bridge where if, like, you're delivering such good work that they can't afford to lose you, the power is in your hand, and you could say, hey, well, you know, let me work from home for 2 days a week, or let me work part-time, or how about I just serve you as a client, you know, and you're mm-hmm. my first client. And, like, you know, those opportunities will become so much more realistic and available to you if mm-hmm. you continue to just bust your butt for that employer on your way out.
Right. Oh, it's so good. I wish I'd listened to this interview before I went into all that. Because, you know, it's
yeah.
so true. And I mean, I feel like I'm fortunate that, you know, things did work out well, you know, as I kind of took those steps moving into entrepreneurship. But these are really great words of wisdom. So thank you for sharing your journey and when it comes to that part of it. So I wanted to make sure we also talked about when you decided to start having your podcast. I just think this is genius to connect with these experts. And I love how you said, selfishly, I just wanted to learn. But by doing that, you actually also were helping an audience. So how did you get your podcast started for anyone who has been interested in that realm of business and connecting and marketing? How did you start your podcast?
Yeah, so I, at the time, I had been following an entrepreneur by the name of David Siteman Garland, who had a podcast/web show called The Rise to the Top. And he interviewed entrepreneurs, and he created a online training program called Create Awesome Interviews. And, you know, the way it was pitched was, you know, follow my step-by-step guide and I'll show you how to make these interviews. And I was like, you know what, I'm just going to invest in this program. I'm going to follow it step-by-step and create my own show. And, you know, I followed it step-by-step, and at the end of it, you know, I knew how to record, I knew how to do all that stuff, and I was doing these side-by-side video interviews with these people that I thought were doing cool things in the mobile world. And around episode 40 or so, I stopped making it video, and I went to all audio for a lot of reasons. One, it was a lot easier to produce. Two, I realized that when you're interviewing someone for, you know, 30 plus minutes, sitting there watching two talking heads is pretty boring.
Mm-hmm.
So audio in and of itself is a more mobile friendly, you know, medium. So, you know, being the guy that was talking about mobile, I felt like the podcast should be consumable in a mobile way, and audio was just better for that. So kind
mm-hmm.
of from around episode 40-ish, the podcast continued on as just an audio only show instead of video and audio. And, you know, it's, like I said, it's opened tons of doors. I've created some of the most amazing relationships that I now have in my life. Some of the people that I've met through podcasting in the last 2 years were at my wedding.
Uh-huh.
You know, like these people are very important to me, and I would have never met them if I didn't start my podcast. So it's one of the best things I can recommend for anyone, because you create some amazing relationships. You'll see all of these doors open, speaking opportunities, you know, creating a really passionate audience and connecting with someone, you know, in their earbuds. You know, you're between their ears, like,
right.
you're essentially in their head. Like, there is no more like intimate place to be with a listener than right there. And it's extremely powerful.
Absolutely. I love that. You're truly in their head. That's exactly where you
yeah.
are. That's so
yeah.
awesome. And what, just out of curiosity for myself and others as well,
yeah.
what, for your audio podcast, what software or website do you use to record your podcasts? Or is there
yeah, so for,
you purchase or
for
installed?
For the longest time, I was just recording. I have a Mac, and
mm-hmm.
I was recording right into GarageBand, which was free. And then I would export that as an MP3,
mm-hmm.
and I would just upload that to a website called Libsyn, Libsyn.
Mm-hmm.
They're just essentially a podcasting media hosting company. And those are the main tools. And then you submit like an RSS feed to iTunes, and then your show is available in iTunes, and you can do SoundCloud, all that stuff. So I would say you want a nice microphone. It doesn't need to be the most expensive. There's you know, some really good ones for like $75 on Amazon. And, you know, record and into something that's free like GarageBand. Now I just started using, actually literally 2.5 years later, I invested in Adobe Audition, which is $20 a month. and it's streamlined a lot of what I do, but by no means do you need to be paying that. GarageBand did it for me, and I know it works for a lot of other top podcasters.
Mm-hmm. And then do you still use the same Libsyn website for hosting all
yep.
that?
Yeah, awesome. All that's the same.
Very cool. And sometimes it's just good to hear how it's broken down, because I remember when I first was getting started in entrepreneurship and people would talk about all these different things like blogging and podcasting and videos and YouTube and Google Hangout. I mean, I remember one time making a list of all the things that I'd learned about in a short amount of time. But at the beginning, it can feel a bit overwhelming because you think, how am I supposed to learn all of this? And for those of you who may not be super tech savvy, I don't consider myself that tech savvy. But sometimes when I start talking to newer entrepreneurs about all the different things that I use, they're just like, oh, my gosh, you're so tech savvy, and I wouldn't even know where to start. And I would say, wait, hold on. All these different tools have been created for people like me who don't really know what they're doing. And just like how you just broke it down, I was able to really think about, okay, I can see where you use, the GarageBand or Adobe Audition. You get the MP3, Libsyn website. Okay, that's where they host the podcast. And then the RSS feed, all that makes sense. And again, for some of you who are listening to this, you're thinking, what is an RSS feed or what is a podcast hosting site? Don't worry. You can find out anything on the World Wide Web, so on Google.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's always a way to break it down step by step, and there's so many great resources to share how to do any of these different things that we are all working on these days. So I wanted to talk to you, since you are our mobile marketing experts. I know that primarily you work with independent retailers, but I know that you we talked about this prior to our interview today about mobile marketing, and I saw on your site kind of the custom mobile responsive site. Can you talk mm-hmm. a little bit about mobile marketing itself and what a custom mobile responsive site is?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, mobile marketing is essentially the way in which you communicate with your customers on a mobile device. There's a lot of different aspects to mobile. There's your website, there's your email, maybe you're doing text message marketing, maybe you have an app. So there's a lot of different aspects to mobile, but the responsive design is essentially a kind of a newer practice that will help make your website essentially optimized for whatever device is trying to access it. And if you've ever been to a site on your phone and you've had to pinch and zoom your way around to find something, that is mm-hmm. not a mobile-friendly site. But as online marketers and stuff like that, bloggers, podcasters, most of the WordPress themes out there now are built using responsive design. And, if a visitor looks at it on a smartphone or a tablet, or a laptop, or even like a big 27-inch monitor, the site will adjust to the screen size and mm-hmm. give the visitor the best possible viewing and interactive experience that they can have, because the buttons will be larger, they'll be tappable, maybe navigation will be modified slightly so it's easier to get around. And it's really, really important for a couple of reasons. One, we've reached a point where more people access the internet from their mobile device compared to any other personal computer. So we're at that point. And anyone listening, the odds are you're at some point going to be maybe listening to this on a phone.
Right.
So a lot of the content we consume is happening on mobile. So you need to prepare your content in a way that it is consumed on a mobile device, and responsive design is one way to do that. Now, secondly, Google just made an announcement that as of April 21st of 2015, they are now going to take having a mobile-friendly website into account for how you show up in their search results. So if your website is not mobile-friendly, they will actually lower you in your search in the search rankings, in their algorithm. So if one blogger who writes about motivation and another blogger write about motivation, one has a mobile-friendly site and the other doesn't, but their content's very similar or equally ranked beforehand, the one that doesn't have a mobile-friendly website will now probably not show up in mobile search results, because Google wants to give their searchers the best possible experience. And they know that their searchers are on mobile, so they're going to do anything in their power to put mobile-friendly sites in front of their mobile searchers. So if it's not because you think that your customers are there, do it because Google will penalize you if you don't. That's just how important it is at this point.
You know, that makes sense. And I think back to my very first website and how cool I thought it was, you know, back then. I just remember you worked so hard and so long on this first website, and you launch it, and you're just like, I've arrived. And then you realize that in this day and age, things are always changing, you know. And so over time, there's always things that fine-tune and tweak. Plus, you're figuring out your business. You're probably changing out your images and your content. And should I have a blog? And what is this whole email marketing, AWeber, MailChimp, Constant Contact? There's so many things to choose from. And so it's really great to connect with savvy entrepreneurs such as Greg and really learn about what it is that you should do to make sure that your mobile marketing is optimized. And when it got to a point where, so many more people were looking at my website through different mediums from their phones to their tablets and all that, I mean, I was that person who's looking at my own site going, why is everything so little? Or why can't I find the navigation bar, you know? And so at some point enough was enough. And I thought, okay, I'm ready to up level here. And it's funny how sometimes we let, kind of that discomfort of, I already paid for it before. I have to pay for it again, or I have to pay, someone to update everything. It is worth the investment, and you can always find someone that can work aligned with your budget and your needs, but know that it is an investment, not an expense when you're running a business, to make sure that when people are going to your site, it's not this itty-bitty, navigation bar, and they're trying to, like you said, kind of pinch and squeeze and find how to get to your about page and your services page and all that. So.
Yeah, exactly. And
I didn't know about the whole SEO part of it, of being ranked lower, as of April's year, but these are all really great tips. So for your business, I also saw that you offer mobile messaging. It said mobile messaging done for you. So what does that mean for a business?
Yeah, so essentially, in its simplest form, it's text messaging. It's a really popular form of mobile marketing, especially for, retailers, where they, just like building an email newsletter, you can build a mobile database and have permission to text your customers with, offers and information about new products, new services, and things like that. So we help our clients build out a database of mobile numbers that they then use to drive increased shopping frequency or increased average order value, when they come into the store. Let's, if they always spend $100, let's use a message that will help them or push them to maybe spend $150. So, it's definitely, it's one of the older forms of mobile marketing, but still one of the most effective. So we essentially do that for our customers.
Very cool. So as an example, if I'm a client of, any company, and I see on their website when I sign up for an account, for whatever it is, to say it's, I'm just trying to come up with an example. Say it's just a shopping website, and then they say, would you like to receive promotional information or offers? Sometimes it's via email, but maybe it says via text, and I click on that because I love the site so much. So I'm like, yes, I want to know about special offers. Is that what you're talking about? Like, and then I would sign up for it. Now they have permission to send me information. So as a business, they are not being intrusive into my life because I've given them permission in a sense, right?
Exactly. It is a permission-based opt-in, just like email. You can't really, send messages to customers unless they, opted in. So, focus on making sure that that's the case as well, because there are a little bit more regulations around text message marketing than, say, email. So you have to do kind of the due diligence to make sure that the customers did, in fact, give you permission.
Right. Yeah, because that's something I've always wondered about, thinking, texting, it's such a personal form of communication, right? But again, it's another connection point. And if I'm giving someone permission to reach out to me thinking, gosh, that's the easiest way for me to get the most instant information on what's happening, then – from the business standpoint, it totally makes sense. So I might have some questions for you beyond our call today.
Yeah, for sure.
I can do some some mobile messaging because I think that that would be a fun project in the near future. So we'll be talking about that. And I'm sure some of you who are listening, are maybe your wheels are turning as well, thinking, gosh, wouldn't it be great as far as I start to grow my platform and my audience base and my email list, wouldn't it be great to have those people that really love what I'm providing them in terms of a service or inspiration or product or whatever, to know that they love it so much they're willing to have me text them, and it's not in a form of being intrusive. It's really more of a form of, hey, I'm letting them be the first to know about what it is I'm offering, and it's something that they specifically have asked for. So that to me is very, very exciting. So let's bring it to present day. So tell us, what are you focusing on now in your business?
So right now it's a lot of scaling my sales efforts. So, you know, with the agency, you know, a lot of the way we get clients is, you know, outbound communications, and, you know, inbound works a lot as well. But, you know, doing kind of the outreach to ideal prospects is, you know, definitely takes time. And, you know, when you're a small team, it takes up a lot of time. So, you know, I'm actually working with some sales teams now to kind of scale out that process. So really growing, you know, it's like, okay, like I've gotten to the point where things are working. We're getting customers, but we're still small, and I need more help. So how can I delegate more of the upfront process to bring more customers kind of into the pipeline, so to speak? So that's what I'm working on. For the most part, and you know, the goal is, you know, the agency is a new business. You know, the last 2 years, most of my revenue has come from coaching and consulting and some online training products around the mobile space. So what I decided to do this time around is basically kind of share behind the scenes as to how I'm building this agency from $0 in revenue to $20,000 a month in recurring revenue. So on my personal blog, I am sharing that journey each and every month. I'm kind of sharing what I'm doing to get more clients, how I'm servicing them, the tools that I'm using, you know, my wins, my losses, my learnings, all along the way from $0 to $20,000 a month in revenue. So I really want to make it visible to people as to how they can maybe do this on their own. And, you know, maybe save them some time by sharing some of my obstacles and how I got through them.
Right, because you mean you actually experience obstacles? That's another point. So I want to make to everybody is that, yes, everybody experiences obstacles, right?
Oh, my gosh, so many obstacles on a daily basis.
Yes, there's always obstacles. So it's just about really knowing that there will be challenges. One of my mentors, she has said, don't think if an obstacle comes up or if a challenge is going to come up, think when. And that way you can really embrace those obstacles and just say, you know what, when it does come up, just say, okay, you know, this is part of the gig, this is part of the journey, and really step into it and just say, okay, I'm going to step into the resistance, or I'm going to embrace the obstacle and say, okay, I'm meant to learn something from this, and we're going to get through this. And you don't quit. Just don't quit when an obstacle comes up, because it's really about perseverance, right? I mean, any highly successful person is not going to say, oh, the road was paved clear for me, and I just skipped my way through it, and nothing bad happened. It was handed to me on a silver platter. It doesn't work that way. So
exactly.
I just know the obstacles are a part of it, and they are the best teachers in terms of really learning from them. So
Amy, one of the things that I learned, which, you know, I was shocked when I kind of really started to embrace it, but it's so true, is that when you become afraid of something, that's actually a sign that you're probably going in the right direction. So my mentors have told me that, you know, use fear as a beacon and go towards that beacon, because great leaders are able to find comfort in uncomfortable situations. And I remember that statement. I basically recite it to myself every single day because, you know, we only have, when you start working for yourself and you're building something that is your vision, the only person that's guiding you is you. And that's scary, because, like, when you know, the whole thing of, like, when you point one finger, you're pointing four back at yourself. It's like, if you choose the wrong path, it's your, it's like, it's on you, right?
So right.
If it's, but if it's scary, it's probably because it's the right direction, right? And, yeah, you know, that's kind of how I gauge certain things. Like, if I'm not a little bit uncomfortable, I'm probably not pushing hard enough, you know?
Right.
So a little, use it as a guide, not as a, not like a, to run away from it.
Exactly. And it's like that human nature, you want to run from it because it's uncomfortable or painful or, you know, it's
yeah,
not pleasant, right? But yeah, but the people who really take on that leadership mentality and say, you know what, okay, here we go, I'm going to take a deep breath, it's going to be okay. And if I'm uncomfortable, just know that's a part of it. And, you know, I just, even in this, even during the speaker series, you know, there's things that can come up, you know, as a, you know, with your podcasting and everything, that mm-hmm, when you're dealing with technology, anything can happen that may or may not be under your control. So, you know, there's been times when I've been recording and then something happens or we get disconnected and you just kind of go, okay, you know what? It's part of life, not perfect. And this is coming from a recovering perfectionist. I always say I'm a recovering perfectionist. And just focus on progress over perfection by taking action,
yep,
instead of waiting for everything to be perfect, because it never will be 100% perfect. You are going to actually make more things happen if you just continue to take steps forward. And,
yep,
and I love that you are so open with your blogging and sharing with people your journey. You know, a lot of times people will only share, here's the step-by-step process after they've accomplished it and gotten over all the obstacles. But you're actually sharing with everybody during your journey and
yeah,
saying, hey, this is what's happening. This is what's going on. Here's my wins. Here's, our, you know, everything. Like, that's the down.
Oh, yeah.
That's fantastic.
I am,
it makes it very relatable. Mm-hmm.
I'm a super emotional person, so I wear my heart on my sleeve, and like starting my own business has been the most up and down emotional roller coaster that I have ever been on, and yes, mm-hmm, more so than any relationship I've ever been in that I've been asked
yeah,
that question, and you know, but it's at the same time like I'm still enjoying myself the most out of any time I've ever been, you know, at any point in my life. And it's
right,
the most challenging, the most rewarding. And yeah, like, you know, like sometimes, heck, earlier today, I started this day off like on a slow note. I was a little down on myself, and then slowly I bounced back up. And, you know, it's like a little roller coaster. It's like there's going to be the ups, there's going to be the downs. And as long as you just acknowledge the fact that that's going to happen, you know,
right,
you're just going to be able to move on through it every single time. But you can't,
mm-hmm,
like, no one goes through this process of building their own business and everything just works out in their favor and, you know, they're always happy. Everything's always, like, happily ever after, because it's not the case.
Right. Even
the
if their
case.
Facebook looks like it is, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So Greg, a lot of our listeners are newer entrepreneurs and coaches and consultants and trainers, and they would love to know, they would love to know how to get that first sweet spot in business of earning $10,000 or more each month, but just getting to that $10,000 consistently each month. So I'm asking each of our experts on Miracle Business Breakthrough to share their top three tips that our listeners can apply right away in their businesses to work towards that goal. So what three tips can you share with our listeners today?
Oof, three. Okay, so one, I would say for the fastest way, I would take a skill set that you already have, that you're already good at, that you enjoy doing, and start charging for it. And don't charge $250 a month, which goes in. So take your one skill, monetize that skill. That's the first thing. Don't try to monetize something that you've never done, okay? There's
mm-hmm,
plenty of people out there that are blogging, trying to teach you how to make $100,000 a month, and they've never made $100,000 a month. Don't be that person. If you have a skill set, use it and monetize it. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Two, charge more for your services. Don't charge for an hourly rate. Charge based on the value you will generate. You know, I got started and I was like, oh, like I'm going to do a coaching call. Like you can pay me $120 for the hour. And yeah, that's actually a pretty good hourly rate, but the value that I was generating these people, like they would come off the call and then they would make, you know, they'd make $5,000 in taking my action, you know, taking my advice. So I was like, right. That's weird. They pay me 120 and they're going to go make 5,000. I need to be charging more, you know?
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
like there's most of you listening, whether you believe it or not, and if you believe it, it'll happen sooner. All you need is one client paying you $10,000 a month. That's it. Like that right. is completely possible. And you don't need to have 100 clients. You don't need to have 20 clients. You could have 1-2 clients and be making the 10K a month. So price based on value. And then mm-hmm. the third thing I would say is only focus on one thing until you get to that 10,000. Don't offer 50 different services. Don't try to monetize like by having an agency and then also, you know, having these three other things that you do that are completely unrelated. Focus
mm-hmm.
on one thing until you get that one thing to $10,000 a month.
Right.
And if you have, and in alignment with that, if you haven't read the book, The One Thing, I highly recommend you read it. It is by Gary Keller, and it is one of the best, most impactful books I've ever read. And it's all about taking your goal and identifying the tasks each and every day that will get you to that goal and spending at least 3 hours a day on that task. And
wow.
by doing that, you will start seeing tremendous amounts of results because you're focused on one thing, you're charging what you're worth, and you're putting in the time on that one thing versus
mm-hmm.
spending, you know, your time like 10 minutes a day on that one thing and doing 100 other things.
Right, and wondering why it's not moving forward, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, that is so good. Thank you so much for sharing those.
Yeah.
So is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Yeah, so if people want to kind of follow the journey of me taking this new business from zero to 20K a month in recurring revenue, if you visit greghickman.me/20K, the number 20 and then the letter K, you can opt in, and I'm sharing on a weekly and monthly basis step-by-step what I'm doing to build this business, the ups, the downs, the blood, the sweat, the tears, definitely the tears, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, the tools that I'm using and how I'm doing it. And, you know, no holds bar, you will see the transparency of how I'm doing it if you are looking for something like that. So greghickman.me/20K for that behind-the-scenes journey.
Perfect. And I'll be sure to include that link on your speakers page so it's very easy for everyone to find. So thank you for sharing your journey with us and allowing us to see firsthand exactly what's happening in your world. It's like we're seeing your journal on a daily basis or on a weekly basis. So thank you.
Yeah.
That's great.
Thank you.
Well, Greg, this has been so much fun. Thank you for joining me on Miracle Business Breakthrough.
Thank you for having me. It was fun.
Yeah. And we definitely hope to chat with you again in the near future. So hopefully we'll get to do that soon. And
definitely.
To those of you who are listening to our series, I want to thank you for tuning in, and I empower you to break free and turn your small business into your dream business. Take care.